tomorrow, of course, 9 o'clock, Lucida report. And then 10 o'clock on Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, we're going to meet to adopt the BRRR reports. Next week's Friday's meeting has been cancelled, so it's Wednesday at 10 o'clock. We'll try. There's no Tuesday meeting. No Tuesday meeting. So I just want to highlight those matters so that members are well informed and prepared. Thank you very much. We also try to have those documents before Wednesday with the members. Thank you, honourable members. No. Right, I'll then ask the honourable members, starting with Honourable Markey, just to introduce themselves, and then I'll ask Mr. McBride to introduce his delegation of IPA. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Jerome Markey, a member of this committee.
Good afternoon, my name is Leonard Ramatlaka, a member of the committee.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, I'm Zakhele Mbele, committee member.
And I'm Diane Kohler-Barnard, also committee.
Dumelang bagaetsho, leina la ka ke nna NG Molebatsi, ke leloko la committee e, ke a lo leboga.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, my name is Phindile Mola, a member of this portfolio committee. I thank you.
Thank you, honourable members. Mr. McBride, you're welcome.
Honourable Chairperson, on my left is Mr. Matthew Sissoko, National Head of Investigations. Next to him is Mr. Senna, our CFO. And on his left is Ma'am Netsianda, who's the Head of Admin. And on her left is Ma'am Susan Leclape, who is the Head of Strategy and Performance Monitoring, and on her left is Mem Morwasi, the Head of Legal, and on her left is Mr. Dlamini, who will be standing in today for Mem Molope, but he's a national spokesperson, and on his left is Dr. Makhoba Titi, who is our Parliamentary Liaison Officer, and across there is Mr. Robert Mamabolo from the ED's office.
Thank you very much to the Executive Director. Without further ado, over to you for the presentation. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. Honourable Members, just an overview. I will outline the presentation. I'll do an overview of the status in terms of annual report, and then the CFO will deal with points 2 and 3. And then Ma'am Leclape will deal with the performance, and then each program manager on under 5 will deal with the different aspects of performance in the programs. So I'll just go over the outline and give some background, so I'll do the overview. So I think the first aspect is the audit opinion. As you may remember, last year we received a qualified audit. We've now moved into unqualified, and that is in line with our strategy of working towards a clean audit and putting in place systems and controls to improve. Also, as honourable members will be aware, there was a reduction of compensation of employees by 14 million, which led to reduction of staff and freezing of posts. So it is a reduction of from 414 to 388. Total workload was 9,414 with the same reduced resources. There's a backlog of 3,446 and an intake of 5,651. You'll notice that there is a significant reduction in intake by about 19%. We look at various explanations as to why that is the case. A significant improvement on the department's performance, as honourable members will remember, it was 34% Last year, and it's almost doubled. It's almost it's over 90% improvement in performance. Key aspects on cooperations: we signed the MOU with the Inspector General in the year under review, which immediately gave tremendous results in our high value, low volumes approach to investigating corruption. The office accommodation aspect is not resolved yet. We are meeting again in this coming week with Public Works. We hope it's not going to be a waste of time, as has been our experience in the past. Our building is not compliant with the health and safety matters, and the recent fire in Johannesburg is an indication of what could happen. We have one entrance, one exit at City Forum. We don't have any assembly place except 200 meters away in across two streets and in another building. So if we come up too quickly, the taxis coming from Marabastat will run us over. A number of litigation matters, mainly as a result of our investigations. And it's an ongoing issue on litigation. Initially, we would be irritated by it, but now we understand, as we, a young democracy, establishing ourselves, there'll be different interpretations. Hopefully, we don't always have to resort to the courts to get clarification on interpretation of law, but that is the way other countries who chose democracy as the way also went through the same battles. So we've, as a result of the constrained budget, we closed four satellite offices, but that doesn't mean we've closed services. We, in some cases, were able to improvise, but the overheads associated with those four satellite offices have now obviously been reduced. But it's a trade-off. What we reduce on premises, gets added onto transport and subsistence. So obviously we continue in reprioritization of resources and investigations. In all aspects of the department, we constantly looking at reprioritization. We are halfway through the new financial year, but the process of reprioritization is continuing. We still have an inability to maintain ICT infrastructure, which affects business operations. We've recently had a Lekgotla, and in the Lekgotla we decided to have a strategic plan rather with ICT infrastructure upgrade and maintenance so that we can ring fence budget for that in future, so we never run behind as we are at the moment. Obviously, honourable members are aware that Farlam Commission recommendations, we are unlikely to be able to implement them without considerable increase in funding and budget from the fiscus. We have inadequate working tools for investigations, and of course that leads to capacity constraints. What I will do now, Honourable Chairperson, with your permission, I'll hand over to the CFO, Mr. Senna, to deal with the financial aspects. Thank you.
Thank you to the Executive Director. You're welcome.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and ED. My presentation will cover the summary of the findings. I'll also touch on the summary of audited expenditure and what were the requirements for last year rollovers, and also touch on unauthorized expenditure, fruitless and wasteful, irregular. And lastly, I will then conclude by just highlighting measures that we are going to implement to make sure that we improve our audit outcome. So on the first slide, Chairperson, is just to highlight the legislative requirements. Firstly, that we are compelled in terms of Section 40(1)(b) of the PFMA to prepare financial statements annually using, in accordance with GRAP, which is the Generally Recognized Accounting Practice. And also what I want to highlight on that slide is that the Office of the Accountant General requires that all government departments prepare their financial statements on modified cash standard. And then on the next slide, Chairperson, I will then focus on the audit outcome for 2017-18. Maybe to also highlight before I start on this slide that our target for this year, Chairperson, was to achieve unqualified audit, which we managed to do. And then the target for next year then is to reduce our findings by more than 50%. And then on the outer year, then the target is to achieve clean audit. So in terms of the plan that we have internally, we are on track because we managed to achieve the unqualified audit, which was the plan for the first year of the plan. And also maybe to highlight other achievements in terms of the finances is that we managed to reduce our accruals this financial year by 36%. I think if you saw the Auditor General's report, you'll see that our financial health has improved. It's mainly because of the internal efficiencies that we've improved, and also our governance structure, as well as the leadership that is providing oversight and leadership over the financial status of the department. And then the issues that were raised by the Auditor General, it's three main issues. The first one is that we've added 6.7 to our irregular expenditure. And Chairperson, I want to highlight with this 6.7 that it was an overlap from 2016-17. It was mainly the security and cleaning contracts that were extended on a month-to-month, which were subsequently terminated in November 2017. So it's an overlap from 2016. And then the other thing that the Auditor General raised was that we are not paying our suppliers within 30 days. And here the challenge is mainly that due to budget challenges that, you know, we've got a shortfall. So as soon as we've got a shortfall, we are not able to pay our surplus within 30 days. So we've also improved our internal processes to make sure that for as long as we still have funds available, at least we pay our surplus within 30 days. And the systems that we've put in place, they are bearing fruits because for the past 2 months, we've been achieving 100% in terms of paying surplus within 30 days. But like I said, again, towards the end of the year when we run out of funds, then it becomes a problem because we don't have funds to settle our invoices. And then the other thing that the Auditor General raised was in terms of where we had to restate some of our figures. So we've also put processes in place to make sure that that doesn't happen. What we are doing now is that we've provided training to our finance staff to make sure that the figures that they present or they disclose, they've got firstly supporting documents and they're regularly reviewed so that when we prepare financial statements, at least what goes there is the correct figures that have been properly verified so that we don't have this problem of having to restate figures at a later stage. And then on the next slide is just to show you a comparison of expenditure, audited expenditure between 2016-17 as well as 17-18. So in 16-17, Chairperson, the audited expenditure, what we spent at year-end was 241.7 million, which represented 99.8%. And then this current financial year, we spent 255.3 of the 255.4 million that was allocated, meaning that we had 147,000 that was unspent at year-end. And mainly, the 146, it doesn't mean we didn't have invoices at year end to pay. It mainly means that, firstly, the challenge was in terms of the cutoff date. Treasury requires you to pay invoices until a certain stage. And secondly, we were very careful not to overspend on our budget, so we are trying to manage that. And then the next slide is talking to the vironments that were done during the financial year. So there was a vironment of 3.6 million that was done, mainly to cover the budget shortfall in Program 2 because they were experiencing shortfall in mainly in their travel accommodation as well as the legal costs. So what we did then, we took 2.7 million from Program 1 and then we took 914,000 from Program 3. And then the total was 3.6 that was allocated to cover the shortfall in Program 2. And then unauthorized expenditure, we didn't incur any unauthorized expenditure, Chairperson. However, we still have 891,000 of unauthorized expenditure. That relates to 2005-06 financial year. Currently, it's waiting for SCOPA to condone. So until it's condoned, it will remain in our books. We can only take it out once SCOPA has given us that condonement of that unauthorized expenditure. And then moving to the next slide, it's the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. We had a fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 5,000, which was made up of 2,000 that related to the interest that was incurred mainly because of invoices that were paid late as a result of us not having funds to pay those invoices. And then the other one was 3,000 that related to the overtime that was claimed without the necessary approvals. And then the next slide, it relates to the irregular expenditure. I've already explained that this current financial year, there was an overlap of 6.2 from previous financial year, which related to the security and cleaning contracts that were extended on a month-to-month basis, and also which were extended above the threshold, meaning that if it's above 15%, it needed treasury approval. So we submitted a request to National Treasury to condone the irregular expenditure, and at year end we hadn't received the approval from Treasury. And then the last slide, Chairperson, is just talking to the measures that we are going to implement to make sure that we achieve that target of clean audit. The first one is to strengthen the internal control. And what we've done to date is we've established the internal control unit. Their responsibility is to make sure that they check each and every payment that we make. Firstly, to make sure that the correct process was followed. And secondly, to make sure that the necessary documents are available for audit. And secondly, in terms of the strategy that was presented, is that we are going to be employing three additional officials for supply chain. This is from the additional funding that we received from SAPS. So it will also assist in terms of making sure that we've got the necessary capacity in supply chain to deal with audit issues. And the third thing is that we are continuously training our supply chain officials to make sure that they understand the processes so that we avoid any findings that relate to supply chain. And secondly, is to ensure that there is compliance with the legislation. There what we are doing is that we've reviewed all the compliance checklists and make sure that we train people in terms of those compliance checklists. And the other thing that we've done also is to make sure that we review the supply chain management policy and we develop SOP based on the policy so that everybody can understand the process in terms of supply chain. And then the last one is to improve the audit outcome to clean audit. And I've already said that we've developed a strategy to make sure that in 3 years we achieve that clean audit. And there what we are focusing on, three things. Is compliance, is the quality of financial statement, and also to make sure that there is regular monitoring and oversight in terms of the finances in the department. So that is my presentation, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Oh, Edie.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. If I can hand over to Memory Klappe now.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I will be taking you through slide number 15 and slide 16. On the first slide, which is slide 15, it's on audit of predetermined objectives. In terms of section 43.A of the PFMA of 1999, which stipulates that the annual report and audited financial statements must fairly present the state of affairs of the department, its business, financial results, performance against predetermined objectives, and its financial position as at the end of the financial year concerned. Only Program 2 was audited during the period under review, which resulted in the audit of 17 indicators for Program 2. And during the audit, the AG identified material findings in respect of usefulness and reliability of some of the performance indicators under Program 2. As a result, there were adjustments that were made to correct the misstatements that were identified. And going forward, because what we have also realized is that there were issues with our record-keeping systems, which also resulted in the AG not being able to conduct further testing on the information that was submitted to them. And so in result of that, we will be ensuring that we improve our record-keeping systems to ensure that information is retrieved timely for submission to the AG for the audit. In the next slide, this is the summary of our performance per program and also the overall performance of the department. For Program 1, which is administration, for the 16-17 financial year, their performance was on 43%, and in the year under review, there was an improvement as compared to the previous financial year. They managed to achieve 80% of their planned targets for the period under review. And for Program 2, there was also a significant improvement in terms of their performance as compared to the previous financial year, from 16% to 59%. And for Program 3, our legal services, there was unfortunately a decline in their performance, from 67% to 50%. And the program manager will deal with the reasons for the performance for the program when she presents performance per program. And for the last program, which is compliance monitoring and stakeholder management, there was also an improvement in their performance, from 33% to 100%. So all their targets were achieved in the period under review. When we look into the overall performance of the department, there's also a significant improvement, from 34% to 65%, which translates to a 57% increase of our performance for the period under review. Thank you.
Much, Eric.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. I'd like to hand over to Ma'am Netsianda from Program 1 Administration.
Thank you very much, Ms. Netsianda. You're welcome.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. My name is Nomkhosi Netsianda. I will be presenting the performance, annual performance of Program 1 for the year 2017-18 financial year. The strategic indicator on page 18 is a capable workforce. Our target was 7 training programs. We exceeded the performance by 13%. With the assistance and collaboration with SASETA, we were able to conduct 13 critical or strategic training interventions or programs. We did investigation and management of cyber and electronic crimes, forensic investigation, celebrate, BID committee training for the members so that they are able to perform their duties in that particular committee. Also, compulsory induction program that is done by DPSA through Palama. A leadership for good governance for our senior managers and middle management, policy formulation and implementation, program and project management, strategic human resource management, executive induction program for our head of department, polygraph testing for our vetting unit officials, Project Kawedu, the methods and perspectives on service delivery, public speaking and presentation for senior managers that was conducted during the period under review. Program performance indicators, we had targeted 10% on vacancy rate. At the end of the financial year, we were sitting at 7%, which was only 29 positions were vacant at the end of the financial year. A percentage of implementation of annual internal audit plan, we had planned 400%, however, we managed to do 14 out of 19 audits that we had planned to do. The reason for underperformance was that the timing where we conducted our provincial audits, it clashed with the period where we were supposed to conduct four audits at national office. Well, which relates to records management, telephone, SCM, fleet audits, as well as HR audits. So we have changed the plan around so that we align the plans with the resources that are available at that time of the audit, so that we achieve the target. A number of reports on risk maturity level produced, we met the target. We had planned for four, one per quarter, so we met the target. Number of performance reports on implementation of APP submitted to National Treasury and DPME within stipulated timeframes, one per quarter, it was achieved at the end of the financial year. As I indicated at the previous slide, we will, in order to improve our performance, we will conduct provincial audits earlier in the year rather than waiting towards the end of the financial year, where you find that sometimes there is no more money for traveling and so on. Also, we will also align our resources with the particular timing that we have put, especially now for 2018-19, we have addressed this particular problem. We also prioritize rolled over audit reviews for April 2018, review the internal audit targets in line with the resources as I've indicated. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Nchiani. Thank you, Edie.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Mr. Sissoko will present now. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members. I'll be presenting on Program 2, Investigation and Information Management, with regard to performance strategic indicators. We had two of them. The first one is specialized investigative capacity. Our target there was 75. We were able to achieve 100, and we exceeded our targets in terms of training in collaboration with SACITA by funding some of the training. With regard to percentage of the scene-ready cases finalized, our target was 60%. We were not able to achieve the 60% target. Achieving 32%, and the reason for not achieving those targets was constrained resources, traveling long distance in vast provinces, as well as outstanding technical reports. With regard to program performance indicators, on percentage of cases registered and allocated within 72 hours of receipt, our target was 78%. We achieved 79%, so we achieved the target there. And a number of statistical reports on investigation generated, our target was 6. We achieved 6. The target was achieved there. Percentage of investigation of death in police custody that are decision ready, The target was 62. We achieved 72. We exceeded our targets there as a result of reprioritization. Percentage of death, of investigation of death, a result of police action. That decision ready, our target was 48. We were not able to achieve the target. We only achieved 30%. This was due to constraints, resources, traveling distances, and outstanding technical reports. Percentage of investigation of cases of discharge of an official firearm, target was 60%. We achieved only 25%. And the reason for that was also constrained resources, traveling long distances, as well as prioritization of cases. Percentage of investigation of rape by a police officer at a decision ready, we achieved the target there. The target was 65, we achieved 66%. Percentage of rape while in police custody, the target was 65, we achieved 100%, we exceeded the target there. Percentage investigation of torture cases that are decision ready, the target was 45, we only achieved 18. That was due to constrained resources, traveling, and also prioritization of cases. Percentage of investigation of assault, the target was 51%. We achieved only 31%. The same reasons obtained also in this regard. Percentage of corruption cases that are decision ready, the target was 40%. We exceeded the target by achieving 45% in this regard. Percentage of investigation of other criminal matters and misconduct in terms of Section 28 and 35 of our Act, the target was 51%. We only achieved 22%, and the reasons are also the same. The constraints, resources, traveling, and prioritization. On the number of systemic corruption that are decision ready, the target was two. We achieved five. We exceeded the targets there, but also that was influenced by the adjustment of the technical indicator. Percentage of all backlog decision ready cases, the target was 50. We achieved 33. And the same reason on other matters also obtained in this regard. With regard to dockets referred to the National Prosecuting Authority, the target was 90%. We achieved 92%. With regard to percentage of disciplinary recommendation referred to SAPS and the municipal police within 30 days of the recommendation report being signed off, the target was 90%. We achieved 94%, and the target was achieved then. When we go to our statistical information, you will note that in the financial year 2017-18, there was a reduction in terms of intake. It's a 19% decrease in terms of intake. The next slide, we indicate the comparison with the 2016-17, and you'll note from the next slide that generally in all categories there was a decrease in respect of cases in respect of cases or the intake that we received. However, you'll note that there were three categories where there was an increase. And that would be your death as a result of police action, where we had a 11% increase. And we also had an increase in cases of torture, where we had a 25% increase, as well as non-compliance with Section 29 of IPID Act, where we also had a 11% increase. And when you look at these numbers in terms of provinces, you will note that in all provinces there were decreases as compared to the previous financial year, with the only exception of Limpopo and Mpumalanga. Limpopo experienced a 8% increase in terms of intake, whereas Mpumalanga experienced a 1% increase. So Limpopo was 365 cases in the previous financial year. In the year under review, it was 395. And Mpumalanga, it's a nominal increase. It was 372. It now increased to 375. The next slide also indicates the different classification. I've already spoken to that in terms of slide 28. On the comparison. So next slide, 31 talks to the recommendation forwarded to the NPA. You will note that we forwarded 1,428 recommendations to the NPA, most of which was cases of assaults, as that is the most number of cases that we normally receive as a department. And then with regard to the feedback on the recommendations forwarded to the NPA or referrals forwarded to the NPA, you'll note that we are awaiting responses on 1,029 cases. We had 297 cases where the NPA declined to prosecute. We had 39 cases where we received queries that were attended to, and four inquest decisions, as well as 51 cases where they decided to prosecute, and 8 cases where the NPA withdrew the matters. With regard to the recommendations to the SAPS on slide 33, we forwarded 1,823 recommendations to the SAPS. This includes 1,089 positive recommendations, and the most recommendations that were sent were with regard to assault cases, which accounts for 1,281 cases. With regard to feedback on recommendations from SAPS for the period under review, we had not guilty 141, guilty 194, disciplinary actions initiated 138, awaiting response 261, and then as indicated, we had 1,089 positive recommendations where we don't expect any responses from the SAPS because we've cleared the members in those matters. We had 234 departmental convictions, of which 93 were written warnings, 39 verbal warnings, 13 fined, 36 dismissal, 10 corrective counseling, 10 suspended without salary, 25 final written warning, 4 reprimands, and 4 suspended sentences. On the next slide, with regard to criminal convictions, we had 99 criminal convictions where 112 members were convicted for different crimes that were committed. With regard to strategy to overcome areas of underperformance, we've identified and implement cost-cutting measures to divert resources to core operations, sharing of resources and workload between provinces, and engaging with our stakeholders and continuous follow-ups on outstanding technical reports, which is a major concern for us. Thank you, Chairperson. That's my presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Soko. ED?
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Ma'am Morwasi, the head of legal, will present now. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members, I will be presenting on the performance of legal services for the period 2017-18. In terms of our strategic indicator, legal services only has one strategic had one strategic indicator, and that was to provide legal advisory services to investigators. The target was 90%, and we managed to achieve 100%. This target is demand-driven, and due to the tight time frames that we have in order to respond to these requests, we ensure that we prioritize ensuring that the investigators get their legal advice on time. In terms of program performance indicators, we have the percentage of written legal opinions provided to the department within 21 working days of request pardon. The target is 90%, and we were only able to achieve 10%. Percentage of contracts finalized within 30 working days of request. The target was 90%. We managed to achieve 71%. Percentage of civil and labor litigation matters that were attended to. The target was 100%, and we managed to achieve 83%. The percentage of arbitration dispute matters attended was 100%. The target was 100%, and the output was 100%. In terms of the above three, that is the legal opinions that are provided, the contracts that are finalized within 30 working days of request, and also in terms of the civil and labor litigation matters, in instances where we were unable to reach the targets that we had set for ourselves. The reason behind the inability to reach the targets that we had set was basically the fact that in the year 2017-2018, legal services was operating only with a chief director, one director, and a senior legal admin officer. During the same financial year, we lost another senior legal admin officer. During the same time as well, we were operating without the support of administrators, so whatever administrative work that had to be done was carried out by the officials within the component. There were the frozen positions as well of the Director Investigation Advisory Services during the same time. That is a reason for the non-achievement of those targets. Just to continue, the percentage of legal advice provided to investigators within 24 hours of request, the target there was 90%. The target was exceeded. This target is also demand-driven, and because of the tight timelines, the requests are then prioritized and then the advisors provide to the investigators within those timelines in order not to compromise the investigations. On the next page, the percentage of written legal advice provided to investigators within 48 hours. The target was 100% and the output was 100%. The target was exceeded here. It is also the same reasoning that this indicator is demand-driven, and because of the tight timelines, the requests are prioritized by the component. There's also the percentage of promotion of access to information request, the PIA request, which are processed and finalized within 30 days of request. This target is legislated to be 100%. During the time frame under review, it was 96%, and this was not achieved due to the capacity constraints and also the as a result of the vacant and frozen positions. I think it's important as well to inform the committee that during the period under review, legal services was very involved in the investigation or in supporting the core program of the IPED during the litigation that ensued from the high profile investigations. So all the high profile investigations that ended up as civil matters, legal services had to use a lot of the resources that it had in order to support the core program of the IPED. In terms of the strategies that we will utilize to overcome the underperformance, what has been done going forward is that the targets for legal services have been reduced in order for them to be in line with the resources that we have and also with the historical performance that has been in the department. As well, the filling of vacant positions and also of the frozen positions. There is also an additional two positions that will be advertised going forward once the concurrence from the minister has been received. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Mr. Dlamini now for Program 4 Compliance, Monitoring and Stakeholder Management. As I said earlier, Mr. Dlamini standing in for Memo Lope.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and Honorable Members. I'll be reporting on compliance monitoring and stakeholder management's performance during the period under review. Our target for ensuring an integrated communication and stakeholder management strategy was 25%. We managed to exceed that target and performed at 53%. With regards to the outreach events conducted, our target was 108. We performed at 127, therefore exceeding the target. We did a lot of our outreach in collaboration with the Ministry of Police and the Department of Justice. With regards to the number of formal engagements on national level with key stakeholders, we at national level, we had a target of 12. We managed to do 32. There was quite intensive engagements with various stakeholders. The number of formal engagements conducted at provincial level with key stakeholders, again, we exceeded the target due to an extensive need for engagement with our stakeholders. Well, we did exceed all our targets, Chairperson, and we hope to keep up the level of performance and the strategies that we employed to get this output. That is the end of my presentation.
Thank you very much, Edie.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. As can be seen, there's a lot of gaps and there's space for improvement, but it's we have to have a continuous monitoring of our strategies and implementation and performance. But it is a trade-off, and some issues will improve, but at the cost of others, within a limited and shrinking budget and fiscus. But we will endeavor to improve performance and improve systems. The high value, low volume investigation will continue. Systemic corruption within the SAPS and Metro Police is still a festering sore. It's unlikely going to be resolved in the short term because of it has taken a long time to consolidate itself within the system. There is a worrying trend of increasing debt as a result of police action, and torture remain a concern. In fact, if I can just, as an aside, in recent months, the last 6 months of this financial year, we've noticed an alarming increase. For example, in the last 2 or 3 months, we've had 3 cases of death by torture within KZN. We're not sure of the reasons, and a lot of reasons can be ascribed to it, but it is a worrying concern because it's almost action with impunity from the investigation. Of course, a worrying issue for us, but as I said at the beginning, that we must roll with the punch, is the use of state and police resources to resist accountability. This is an endemic problem within SAPS, and it's a cultural problem within SAPS. Police do not like to be investigated, and the idea of being investigated is a difficult one to get their heads around. I think some retraining on constitutionalism and accountability in a constitutional democracy needs to be included in the curricula with emphasis on accountability. We'll continue to engage with the stakeholders and move towards greater independence for ourselves, so that we don't have to always rely on others for technical reports. There is a big hold up in sense of accountability and change of attitude within SAPS, because what SAPS has done, SAPS has put in place regulations which is junior tier legislation to deal with disciplinaries, which kind of undermines IPED's primary legislation issues, and this results in them appointing investigators to reinvestigate cases that have already been investigated. Clearly, when the regulations were drafted, they were drafted without our input. It was during the time of the exile. But the long-term effect on it is the fact that the idea that the police have to investigate themselves in their minds is still a wrong idea, and they continue to perpetuate it. The reason for IPED being there is so that they investigate the police, and the police don't investigate themselves. And that doesn't seem to have gotten through to them yet. It's still a great resistance, great inertia. For we are not included in the disciplinary processes unless we force ourselves in. And it should be a normal course of events. People should feel comfortable, including police, that we will do an honest job, a good job, and that it's better to be investigated by us than some of the seniors who might have bones to pick with them. So that is a problem. It's a cultural issue, and it's an issue of our growing young democracy as we battle and enforce rights and responsibilities. Of course, our ICT infrastructure, if that improves and we have sufficient budget, we'll be able to improve our core program priorities and performance. Of course, we are on a program to improve our performance and financial management in line with the Auditor General of South Africa recommendations and the management action plans that go with it. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you. That is the presentation. Members, we will now go to questions. The first few from my side, and then we will go to the honorable members. Yeah, I think the first important issue maybe to highlight, I think we welcome the fact that there's an unqualified audit, that you move from a qualified audit. But, of course, in the police portfolio, we want to ensure that all institutions graduate to a clean audit. That's quite important. And, of course, IPED is an oversight institution, so they must lead the example. But and maybe my questions will be related to that. Now, we had received a briefing on Tuesday from the AG, and it's quite clear that most of the issues is issues that can be addressed in terms of IPED. The civilian secretariat sat with much bigger issues, but there was a concerted effort from management, the program managers, to address those issues very, very sharply. And from our side, the committee side, we pushed them, and they've obtained it. My concern with the input from the CFO is that he wants to use a three-year window to graduate. And my problem is, if you look at the AG's issues, well, it's consequent management, internal control deficiencies, proper record management, inadequate controls. That is management issues. And if you go to the report that was given to the AG to us about the portfolio, again, a green is good, yellow is of concern, intervention required is a red. Now, of course, your audit committee did well, your internal audit is green. So the structure is there, but senior management, accounting officer, financial performance management is still a yellow. So there must be, and the Auditor General said also in all the portfolios in the police group, it's slow reaction to the AG's recommendations. So slow out of, so a lot of months are kind of wasted at the beginning after the audit. So those, that slow reaction, that is the one issue that needs really important, you know, attention. And then the control issues, and that's about managers, consequent management. So the ED, you must crack the whip. That is the message from the committee this afternoon, ED. If there is not, you know, prescripts are not kept, there must be consequent management, because that is the dilemma also in the policing environment. So I think that is an important issue. The other issue that the AG also indicated was the issue of the AFS. Now, that's been a long-standing issue with IPED, that in the AG must, you know, pick up the mistakes. So maybe, ED, the technical skills in your finance group, are you satisfied that you've got the skills, division of labor? If you can just maybe indicate what can be done, because most of the issue the AG has put on the table is issues that can be addressed by strict, very strict management from the relevant role players. Then the last issue is the issue of police corruption and police conduct in certain areas in South Africa. Now, last week, there was a march to Parliament by this new group that's been active across the country. In certain areas complaining about gang and gun violence. But we had a discussion last Wednesday with the group, and some of the issues that was raised directly was the issue of police corruption in that areas where allegedly members of SAPS are in cahoots with maybe local drug lords, local people involved in illegal gun smuggling and so forth. And we've arranged now on the 21st of November a special meeting, and we're also going to invite in IPED to give their perspective on that issue. But my question is, in terms of the trend, of course IPED focuses on high profile matters, high value. The question is, those kind of issues, complaints originating from those communities, where there is complaints about alleged police corruption, shouldn't that be also be a focus, maybe in terms of the current environment, to say, well, if members, if there's allegations, they go to the police, there's no action against local syndicates, shouldn't IPED, you know, take the responsibility and deal with those issues? Maybe the comments on. Honorable Mula.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your presentation. And congratulations on your own unqualified audit report. But you must work very hard so that it must be a clean audit. My first question, will you please explain how investigations against civilians are conducted? Because during the 2017-2018 financial year, 9 civilians were investigated on charges of rape in police custody. My second one is in slide 23 on your comments. When you say target not achieved due to prioritization of cases, when you say prioritization of cases, can you explain what do you mean? Because I think the case of discharge of firearm by a police officer, that a decision really. Are these cases not priority? My third question is program 3. Will you please indicate whether there will be an increase in the number of collaborations with other government departments in the 2018-2019 year, so as to reach more communities? My last one, what is the current status on engagement with Treasury to have legal services reinstated as a budget program of the department. I thank you.
Honorable Mamula, Honorable Mulabatsi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also congratulate you in your unqualified audit and wish you well in your route to go to get the clean one. My first question, the 17 additional posts in the entity, were they approved by the Department of Public Service and Administration? My second one is, tell us about the extended contract and why this was done without proper delegation of authority. The third one, tell us about the initiatives that you have taken to ensure the filling of 8 vacant posts in the SMS. My next one, a total of 14 disputes were lodged with councils during the 2017-18 financial year, of which one was upheld, 3 were dismissed, and 10 were pending. Tell us about the rest of the disputes. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Abachi. Honorable Kola Barnard.
Thank you, Chair. The reason behind the reduced intake of 19%, I mean, that's a significant amount. Has that perhaps got to do with the closures of the satellite offices? I can't believe I'm saying it, but is it a possibility that there's improved SAPS members' conduct? Okay, not. So looking at your faces. So why? I had to say it, okay, to be balanced, but why the decrease? I don't understand what's behind that. How long have you now been in that Rue Shubangu building? And do you have any indication when you're going to be able to get out of it, hopefully before it burns down around you? Now, I ask this because it looks like you're upgrading your IT or need to upgrade that whole IT infrastructure. But that would then be possibly a major cost implication should you then promptly move to another building. I don't know how much of it is portable, how much of it goes through walls, etc. Now, there does seem on occasion to be some misalignment between expenditure and performance, even though you were severely constrained financially, but then you did have 17 more employees than the approved personnel establishment, it seems. How did you get that right? I don't know how it can happen. And then you had 10 grievances and 14 disputes. Now, I used to handle stuff like that. It's a relatively high number for a relatively small organization. What would be behind those? Page 102, all the numbers are missing. Maybe you could help us out there and fill them in or give us a new sheet or whatever. Are you still finding that the SAPs are failing to inform you of the obvious ones, the discharging of the firearms, the cell escapes, the rapes, etc.? I mean, we're looking at non-compliance up by 11%. Are you still relying often on personal reports or even newspaper reports? Because it's always infuriated me since the days of the ICD that the police deliberately want to treat that entity and now your entity with the greatest disrespect. But on the other hand, I see that of your investigations, just so few people are actually held to account. Is that your fault? It's got to be. I don't know who else to blame when the NPA gives it a shot and they fail to result in convictions. It's got to be the investigator's fault. So where's the problem and how are you going to fix it? And that leads directly to your backlog. What's your plan? It's increasing. What are you going to do? And finally, are you at any stage working collaboratively with the SAPs? It strikes me they're doing lifestyle audits. This committee's pushed for lifestyle audits for as long as I can remember, and they're actually doing them. But in their investigations, for example, they have found 8 top people who can't get security clearance because they've done something somewhere. They don't tell us what, they hide it away. But it strikes me that the IPED should be told about this, and maybe you should be investigating why these various generals and bigwigs, what they've done to ensure they can't get security clearance. And they're moving through all the ranks, all the way down. So it seems to me you should be told of every lifestyle audit which results in an outcome that would be detrimental to the SAPs should it be revealed. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Kolobana. Honourable Mabele.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I'm covered on the 19% reduction of case intake already, because I was also curious as to what the reason behind that, or rather if the reason behind that might be linked to the closure of offices. Secondly is my big concern about the challenges that were highlighted in the ICT environment, because it's a missed opportunity in a sort of double-edged way. On the one hand, if you had the modern and up-to-date infrastructure, it could actually minimize or avoid many of the audit's risks when it comes to material misstatements and how all those processes are managed. But I think it could potentially be a value add for the core investigative program as well. It indicated that this will be addressed by reprioritizing in the budgets, but given the already very tight fiscal space that the department has been in and is in, how confident are you that you can achieve the adequate to optimal reprioritization to address that area? Because I think once the ICT gets your attention, it could have a manifold effect in other areas. And then my third question, Chair, is I also share and have shared the ED's concern about the reinvestigation of many cases by SAPS after IPED has made their recommendations. And on the at least 2 occasions I recall when I asked about it, SAPS always cited Regulation 8, I think they said, as being the basis for their internal process that fundamentally does a reinvestigation. So is there a proposed remedy from the ED and from the IPED team to that dilemma or to that defect, so that just start to ruminate on that? It could have relevance for the IPED amendment bill, for example. Next year.
Honourable Bailey, Honourable Marke.
Thank you, Jefferson. Just one question. Overall, does IPED feel there's any difference in the conduct of the police in any way? And if there is, which areas are improving and which ones are becoming worse? In other words, I'm trying to say, do you feel you are making a difference? Thank you.
Yeah. Just maybe one question from me. I think in the last engagement with IPED, there was indication of your own program, intake program, training investigators. I just want to get maybe an update. Is everything on track, and to ensure that that program gets the necessary impetus? That's the questions. Edie, over to you and your team. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. I think I must start the most contentious issue and be as honest as possible. The issue of consequence management within IPED, and IPED being must be an example and all of that. A simple issue is some of our findings cannot change. There will always be findings unless we get more money. So that's the bottom line. It's just the issue of the 30 days. If your money runs out, you can't pay. That's simple as that. I've been looking at the 13, 14, and 14, 15 annual reports. It's the same story. It's the same thing. So there's at least two findings, major findings, which CFO spoke about. But let me move to consequence management in SAPS. Now, in SAPS is a big organization, 200,000 people. And therefore, there's key in the leadership, what a leadership does. Now, I'll give you an example. In our investigation, certain things are revealed. So, for example, we had, at some stage, a few years ago, a Brigadier Sandra Temer, who resigned from SAPS. And that Brigadier came back as a Major General, resigning whilst under investigation. That now general got 57 companies. Those companies have relationships with service providers on SAPS. Big money. Now, that decision was taken somewhere and everybody just let it go on. And then back to another contentious issue. Consequence management in IPED. Okay, when we do it, we get instruction from minister, don't do any disciplinary against this person. That is untenable. You can't have it both ways. Firstly, you shouldn't interfere, and none of us want to insulate ourselves from accountability. We've always asked to. But when you set an example, set the example on top, and on the Sandra Temer issue, Major General Sandra Temer, there's no explanation given. No one is even attempting to explain. Senior police officers are happy to engage in work with them. We pay 30,000 rand per bulletproof vest. You don't need IPA to say something is wrong with that. You know, you get 16 people go for training abroad in whatever they're doing. They're not police officers. They go on police budget. They come back. They go into DPCI. After a few months, then they are smuggled into the murky water of crime intelligence. No cooperation from crime intelligence side on any of this. You say, no, it's a hot potato. The issue of classification, we are bumping heads all the time in classification. It surprises us that crime intelligence is not aware that there is no legislation that provided for the establishment of crime intelligence. So nothing in the SAPS Act, nothing in any other act. There are oversight legislations, one related to, and which assume it's a service, the Oversight Intelligence Oversight Act and the National Strategic Intelligence Act. We'd refer to CI as a service, but there's no legislation. Like IPED is a creature of the Constitution and legislation. There is no such a thing about crime intelligence. Some of the people who don't have security clearances that fail are busy classifying documents which have nothing to do with sources and national security, to do with corruption and procurement. The very same ones who have no security clearance want to deny documents to us or classify it willy-nilly. Wrong classification of document is defeating the ends of justice. We receive no help on this issue. We're making some progress. We're going to approach and try and resolve the issue before we litigate against. But on behavior, you find at the highest level, it's clear from us that people are appointed to carry out nefarious activity within SAPS. So the notion 5 years ago used to be career policeman is a really good person for appointment and so on. From IPED experience, career policeman often means a corrupt policeman at the highest level. That's what it is. And they go out of the way, honorable members, to protect each other. Out of the way. I mean, it's unashamedly so. I don't want to go back in the past and remind the committee about other issues. But the consequence management within SAPS is very key. We will undertake on our side in IPET to do consequence management. A lot of scurrilous activity takes place with the funds that are not budgeted, like your integrated justice system IJS funds, because that is not looked at, because it's not on your budget. So a lot of money goes in there. It's managed by SAPS. None of the other organs of the justice system have any slice of that, and that's where it's happening. We're talking about big amounts of money. People, from our experience, looks like they get promoted for doing wrong things. Just goes on. But middle management, we have noticed an improvement in notifying us when there are incidents and willingness to cooperate. But because it's a rank conscious organization, even people who want to help us, we've been investigating an abuse of state resources case from someone in the National, it's in the Eastern Cape. The person says, I'll give you the statement, but I need to ask my boss about it. The bosses have gone out of their way to hide the information from us. It's there. It's a fait accompli. We'll prove the case. So is that kind of abuse of state resources and doing it with impunity that is a problem? On the ICT system, the ICT system will improve performance in the core function. I think most of the components of the ICT system, they are portable, they can be moved to another building. We'll have to lay the cables again and so on. But the servers, you can plug in and move them and plug them in on the other side if we get another building. So the ICT issue is it's really where it's at. Our system also is unable to do certain things. This flow-centric system, we're in the process of assessing its efficacy and to look at alternatives or possible alternatives to look at it. So there's an assessment Mr. Sissoko is busy with on that. Mr. Sissoko and the CFO and other members of the team will deal with the other specific issues, and then I'll come back if there's anything that I've missed. Or the cadets are training, the training issue. We will need extra budget to be able to train, and we'll need more posts. It's a serious risk for us to train people, even give learnerships, and then we let them out again. And then it's snapped up by SAPS. We are also not an attractive destination for employment because we don't pay. We are flat department. There's no upward mobility, and we don't pay as well as the markets for the work that's expected of us. We'll need to change the legislation to look at graduates and look at it differently. But graduates wouldn't come into us if the pay is not right. So it's again. Bottom line and standards of living for people. Until the situation drastically changed, it will be difficult to do anything. However, we have approached and have had discussions with APCOV, which is an NGO which deals with policing oversight on the continent, to look at a proposal as to how we deal with it and to then decide what we need and then go and look for funding, so that we can do it. And then over a 2 years to 2 year and 6 months, look at a process of weaning ourselves off of reliance on SAPS. For example, in one area, just ballistics, let's look at that. So we'll take new people in, we'll train those that are already there, and we'll train the trainers so that we have a training capacity internally, especially in specialized areas. So we are hoping to move that program forward in the near future, before the start of the new financial year. I'll hand over now to my other colleagues in the order in which they're sitting. Thanks.
Mr. Soko, you're welcome.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. With regard to the question on the issues that have recently came up on the communities that are alleging corruption by members, it's an issue that we have to have a dedicated project approach to. First, by engaging those communities to get information and be able to establish the extent of the scope and the capacity that will be needed to deal with that. So it's something that we will definitely be looking at. On the question of civilians, Honorable Mola, that section of the Act provides that we investigate rape in police custody. So what you find is that some of those rapes that happen in police custody are not perpetrated by members themselves, but are perpetrated by civilians who are inmates. So that is why you see those civilians there. So what we do then, we look at the circumstances that made it possible for this rape to happen in that in the custody of the police, and who are the people who are responsible for that rape, and that is where you find those civilians appearing in our report. With regard to the question on not achieving because of prioritization, what we mean is that given the resources that we have, as we've always indicated to the committee, that we have decided to prioritize our investigation based on the constraints that we have, resource constraints that we have. So we took a strategic decision that we'll prioritize death in custody, death as a result of police action, your corruption case, and so forth. So whilst we investigate all our Section 28 matters, however, the emphasis on prioritization will differ. Those that we prioritize will take priority in terms of investigation. So, for instance, if today I receive a case of death and assault, I will prioritize death over the assault. So that is why you see that. When you look at our performance also, you will see that that prioritization permeates, because most of the matters where we are able to achieve our targets is those matters that we've prioritized. That is linked to the question in relation to the backlog, which we recognize also that the issue of the backlog is something that needs to be dealt with, and as, that is why we have also a specific a target on the backlog, because we don't want a situation that we find ourselves building up more backlog cases that at the end we are unable to investigate. So part of the strategy that we've dealt with is to try and meet the targets on the backlog. But because of the extent of the backlog that has built up over the years, so we've asked the provinces to assist. So those that receive lesser cases to assist those that also receive more cases, so that we try to deal with the issue of the backlog. The reality is that as long as our financial situation does not change, our capacity situation does not change, the likelihood is that the issue of the backlog will remain with us for some time until that situation changes. But it's one of the priorities of the my program to ensure that we deal with the issues of backlog. Now, with regard to
Honourable Kolobana,
just waiting for a little patch where I could jump in. You spoke about the rapes that are by civilians, incels, which we hear of as a common occurrence. But do you not look into, in that instance, who put the person in there? Because we've had a woman put in a male cell and gang raped overnight by 11, 12, forgotten. Recently, a week ago, the SAPS paid out nearly R1 million for a guy arrested and told, an old farmer, told he must admit to stealing petrol, chucked in the cells, threatened with gang rape, beaten, etc., beaten up by them,
And then when he went to court, bearing in mind he was an old white man in a white car, they said the suspect on the notes was a black woman in a red car. So it was a very deliberate intimidation come torture tactic. Were you called in to deal with that, or do they just do their own little thing and, again, people will get away with it? I'm very concerned that... What are you doing to me there? I'm very... I thought you were just making me shut up. I'm just very concerned that this is becoming a common occurrence. We had a woman shot at... She was on the phone to her mother. I think I'm being hijacked. Oh, help. And they shot her car, rolled, died. They didn't tell anyone until finally someone noticed the bullet holes in the side of the car. She was dead. And finally, it goes through SAP system. No, nobody's guilty because they don't know who fired the shots. Now, I'm sorry. You know, I don't believe they even mention things like that to you. They're still, after a decade or 15 years of this, they're still treating this body with complete contempt. We've got to be able to work out what to do about it.
Thank you, Honorable Colonel Barnard. Mr. Sissoko?
Yeah, I think, as I've indicated, that when we investigate like cases of rape in police custody, those are the issues that we look at. As I said, that we look at the circumstances that made it possible for the rape to occur in police custody, because you cannot expect rape to happen in police custody. I mean, if a person is in police custody, you expect that person to be safe in the custody of the police, and the police must make sure they ensure the safety of that person. So we look overall what were the circumstances that made that possible, and we are able to, and the investigation will then figure out who made it possible for that to happen, how, where were they, you know, where were the police that the rape happened. This is also linked to the earlier question in relation to the reporting as obligated in terms of Section 29 of our Act. Now, what we find is that there will be reporting, but sometimes when members realize that they've done something wrong, then they won't be reporting. You will realize that there's an increase in our statistics in relation to non-compliance with Section 29 of our Act, because we then charge them for their failure, because some of these cases we find after the fact that this is a matter that they were supposed to report to us, but they failed to report to us. We still have challenges, of course, in relation to the prosecution of these cases with the prosecuting authority. But you'll, as I've indicated, you'll see that there's an increase in the number of cases, because we follow up once we become aware that it was a reportable matter and they failed to report on it. And then when we become aware, then we follow up and then we lay criminal charges against them in terms of Section 33 of our Act. There is also a question in relation to matters where the NPA declined to prosecute. So you will see that there's quite a number of matters where they declined to prosecute. Now, it's important that we also understand that where the NPA declined to prosecute, it does not necessarily mean that we did not conduct the investigation properly, and that is the reason why they declined to prosecute. The decision to decline to prosecute may be that there is no evidence, also in terms of our own investigation, there is no evidence that will enable them to prosecute. So in situations where we feel that there was a strong case to prosecute, however, they refuse to prosecute, we engage the NPA. You know, there are a number of cases where we've written to, from the level of the DPP to the level of the NTPP, to say we don't agree with you, you know. In fact, at some point with the ED, we're even contemplating instituting a legal review of some of the decisions because we don't agree with them in those decisions. So what you must understand is that what guides us is the evidence. So it's not all the evidence that we conduct that says there is a crime committed. some of our investigation revealed that there was no crime committed or they exonerate the members. Hence, you will see when you look at also our recommendation to the SAPS, you'll find there's a high number of cases where we've actually exonerated the members to say based on the on our investigation, there was no evidence to suggest that there was a criminal conduct or even misconduct on the part of the member. Because our role, as per the Constitution, is exactly to do that, to do an independent investigation that will give an outcome that will say whether there was a crime committed or there was no crime committed. The issue of the reinvestigation, I think, Honorable Mbele, you're correct. We've had a workshop with the SAPS on our recommendations with the civilian secretariat also, and then this is an issue that we raised very sharply with police management to say it cannot be that Section 30 of our Act is very clear in terms of what the obligations of the SAPS is in relation to our recommendation, and you find a situation where the SAPS does conduct another investigation on what we've already investigated. I mean, that is not only waste of resources by government, but also when the investigation is done by them, how do you say that is an independent investigation? I mean, very recently we received a similar thing where the provincial commissioner in Gauteng decided not to implement disciplinary proceedings against the member based on a reinvestigation by one of the members, and it turns out that the member who was appointed to investigate that matter, to do the reinvestigation, is actually close to this very same people we're investigating. So that can never be an independent investigation. So in the workshop, this issue we raised sharply with them to say it's not acceptable. We expect that when we do a recommendation, if for some reason SAPS does not agree with our recommendation, they must engage us. They must tell us what is it that they are not happy with in our recommendation. And at the end of the day, it is IPED that must decide. You know, if they say these are the issues that we have with investigation, we'll either look at that and say, yes, we agree with you, and then we'll go and reinvestigate, or we'll say, no, we are happy with our investigation, you must proceed in terms of Section 30. So that is the issue that we've raised. Despite this, the undertaking on their part, that is how they will deal with these matters. Unfortunately, we still have this situation, as I've indicated, with the last matter. So, yes, I think it's something that we must look at it at the policy level, because it clearly it's a problem. We even advised them to say, because they were insisting that no, it's because our regulations were negotiated with labor and so forth. We said, but there is nothing stopping you to go back to labor and say the IP Act supersedes these regulations. So therefore, we must comply with IP Act, you know. And I've never heard of a situation where they say they actually went strong and say we insist that we'll deal with this issue in terms of what the IP Act says, and then they got a legal challenge, you know. Instead, they tend to be wanting to more deal with issues in relation to their that regulation without considering what the Act says. There was a question on the reduction of the intake. Now, it's not an easy question to answer because we do not have influence in terms of the number of cases that come or not. And this, I think, is also linked to Honorable Makhe's question of whether there is any improvement or do we feel that we're making impact. However, what we can say is that based on our statistical information that we've provided, you'll see that, for instance, there's a reduction in the number of corruption cases. Now, these high-profile matters that we've been investigating have been highly publicized. And we believe that the fact that there's high publicity of these cases and the fact that there's indication that we can deal with the members who are alleged to be corrupt at the highest level, that can have a deterrent effect on members at a lower level. So it may be attributed to that. I mean, the executive director recently attended, a Foresight meeting where there was an indication that a survey was made by DPME, which indicated that there was a high level of a recognition of the work of IPID, you know. So we believe that that also may have influence. But we have not done any scientific research to be able to account for that, and something that will definitely look at to say the impact of the work that we have in the conduct of members. What we can be able to say with some certainty is that members on the ground are already feeling the work of IPID, and that could also influence these numbers.
There's just a follow-up from Honorable Colonel Barnard.
You know, I understand the theory that you're scaring them straight, okay, because of the high-profile cases, but I did ask if there was any relation to, I think you said you'd shut four satellite offices. I don't know what numbers were brought in at those offices, but now there's like no one. I mean, in KZN, you have the one office in Durban, so if you're down in Newcastle, wherever, no one's going to drive 8 hours and come and talk to you, so or catch public transport, and they don't have cell phones and things. It's a huge issue. So there certainly should be more satellite offices, but you're closing them because of financial restraints. I understand.
Honourable Member, is this a short poll?
My apologies, Honourable Member, I missed that question. It's true that we've closed satellite offices. The reality is that because of how this Parliament created our Act to force SAPS members to report all these cases to us, over 90% of the cases that we receive are cases that are reported at police stations and reported to us. So whether the closing of the satellite office has had impact on the number of cases, it's very much possible. It's very much possible because it talks to accessibility. And hence, we still continue with our expansion strategy, even reviewing it, because we also believe that access to our offices is important for the communities that we serve. And if we're not accessible, that can also affect their ability to be able to make us aware of these cases, like the communities that the chairperson was talking to in terms of reporting these cases to us. So it definitely may influence also these numbers, the fact that we're closing a satellite office. And that underpins the importance of having enough resources to fund the expansion strategy to be able to be in every district within the country.
Edie?
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. CFO?
Thank you very much, Chairperson and Edie. I think some of the questions that I'll respond to Edie has already partly touched on, but I'm going to repeat them just to emphasize them. I want to start with the question that Honorable Mbele raised in terms of the role that ICT plays in terms of us achieving the clean strategy. And I fully agree that ICT is very critical in terms of that. And the example that I can give you, Honorable Member, is that If you look at provinces like Gauteng, Chairperson, it's automated right from the beginning to the end when you do the payment. Whereas with us, when it comes to the qualification for last year accruals, you have to calculate them manually. So if we had functioning ICT system, we'd just go to the system and press and get the figure in terms of accruals and we're able to disclose. And that is why I'm very passionate about this thing. So what we've decided to do internally was to push this thing to say, let's have a strategy in place in terms of how are we going to modernize and ICT within IPIT. And then how we are going to fund it is that already we've submitted a proposal to the National Treasury to fund it through the EU General Budget Support Program. We've already submitted another proposal to the CARA funding so that they can also provide. But also because it's critical to us, once that plan is there, is to make sure that we reprioritize some of the funding to make sure that we improve our ICT systems. Because it has been proven that if you invest in your ICT, in the long term, you are able to realize savings within the department. So it's quite critical that you've got that plan in place. And secondly, Chairperson, I do agree with you that it is critical that we move faster towards clean audit. But like ED has already said, some of the issues that are not beyond our control. For example, if you miss paying suppliers within 30 days in April, it's out. It means you are not going to be able to achieve clean audit in the long term. And for as long as we still have the issue of underfunding and accruals, it's going to be difficult for us to be able to achieve that target in terms of paying suppliers within 30 days. But what we are doing is to say those items that are within our control, like, for example, the issue that you've raised, the misstatements, the issue of improving internal controls, those ones we are attending to them to make sure that we address them as part of achieving that clean audit strategy. So we are working on it, Chairperson, and we are very much committed to making sure that we achieve that clean audit internally. And then there was another question that Honorable Mulibat raised to say, the contracts that were extended without Treasury approval, which contracts are those? It was the security and cleaning contracts, and what happened is that those contracts, they ended. However, they continued on a month-to-month process until they were terminated. And then what was the challenge internally in terms of that? It was essentially the issue of internal capacity. And it's still an issue currently because if you look at our contract management unit, currently we only have one person. And that person, if you ask to say what skills do they have, I mean, it's one person who studied chemistry. We still have to capacitate that person to be able to manage contracts. But what we've done is that we've centralized the issue of contract management within the Deputy Director Supply Chain so that it's able to firstly make sure that we've got an accurate register of all our contracts. Secondly, to make sure that all our contracts are extended on time. So we are attending to this. And one of the posts that have been identified in terms of the 27 additional posts is exactly that. It's the Assistant Director Contract Management who's going to assist us to make sure that we manage our contract better. And then the other question that was asked is in terms of, well, Public Works, I will respond to it. I think management requested me to respond to it. The issue of acquiring a new building, Chairperson, is an issue that came from 2016 after the court had declared the existing lease agreement invalid. So according to the report that I received is that Public Works went out on tender two times already. And then they are claiming that through those processes, they were not able to appoint or to get a building for us. But, you know, the assessment is that I think there was no willingness from Public Works to assist IPIT in terms of, in terms of assisting IPIT to get a building. But recently, National Treasury have tried to intervene in the matter. So last month, what they did, they called a meeting between ourselves and Public Works. And after that meeting, we agreed that we are going to establish a task team. And the target is to get a building within 2 to 3 months, because National Treasurer was saying that we've already given you a deviation as Public Works, so it should be very much easier for you to get a building within a very short period of time. So we are hoping that we'll get results out of that process. But again, I saw that they sent a meeting request for Monday with the ED. And out of that meeting, we are going to push that. Let's get that commitment for us to be able to get a building. And I'm hoping that there will be results out of that meeting, Chairperson.
Yeah, IPED must also attend the meeting we're going to have in November that we've arranged now with DPW as well as SAPS. We also invited Civilian Secretariat. They've got also the same issue. So I think it's important that IPED just also prepare a presentation for that interaction. I think the second week of November, yes.
Do you have, and now you've had the misfortune of having to deal with Public Works, are you of the opinion that what they've done is absolutely deliberate? Because we all know it's Rusha Bangu's building. He's the one Becky signed off in Durban, everywhere, all over the place. I've asked them about 7 times to tell me how many buildings are rented from this person. Now, they're slum buildings. I mean, to hear, oh, they fixed the toilets, isn't that wonderful? No, it's not. What are you doing in a building with no toilets at work? And lifts it up. I've been in buildings. We've been in buildings as a committee where you have to walk 7 flights up. Poppy stayed in the bus. You know, no lifts have worked. They are slum buildings. And then if you dig and you dig, you find out exactly who owns them. Now, there's a Public Works, someone in there has got connections. And it just seems very obvious to me what's being done to you, because it's being done to virtually everyone in every department of this government. Yeah.
Thank you. Let's go to the other responses. We're just waiting for the refreshments that's not pitching, but let's continue.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Just 2 issues. One issue is DPW, yes, is deliberate. We think it's corruption. We've actually been approached with offers that they could, you know, some people they could, there is budget to buy the building. And we were not kind in our response to them. You might get a complaint and it'll be consequence management out of what we said to them. But on the issue of security contract, in 2014 we had requested from my office that we should go out in tenders and work out the specs and all of that. And then there was the instability of 2015, which the approach to security was changed, for good or bad or whatever the case is, but to make all security in-house. And so there was stagnation in that process until we came back and got it going again. So there is an objective reason why there was a problem with security and cleaning. It's the same issue. And then before I just hand over to Ma'am Netsianda, in the issue of grievances and so on, it's a normal course of event that happens. But we've had occasions, for example, and it's linked to consequence management. We give a written warning, and the person says it's a grievance, then asks for money. And there's some, because we're small departments, easy for people to connive, people in important positions, and collaborate on putting in grievances because they've received written warnings. So some of those issues are genuine, and we've dealt with them wherever we can. And some of them, people have issues. There's no perfect department, even a little department like us. The joke in the department is we are so small, yet we have 100 times more drama in our own department than any other department. So precisely because we are small, there are key individuals in key places, pivotal areas, who abuse the fact it's high risk because we're small. The fact that they have the final say in what happens in certain issues. So sometimes the advice I get, whether it's on procurement issues or on legal issues, I have to double check because there's an angle on it always. So we don't exaggerate, not always. On occasion, there's been angles. So sometimes you'll get advice which is to cover up for something that happened before, or some, minor problem or oversight or something. So one has to be very careful with this and familiarize yourself with everything. So, but disputes in the workplace is normal. That's why there's mechanisms for it. It's the fact that there can be so much in a tiny little department is cause for concern. But also the competition for posts increases because it's so small and it's a flat department and upward mobility is limited. People who have an interest or don't have an interest or have vindictive reasons sometimes put in disputes. We've had that experience also. When I arrived in 2014, I found a range of complaints that were referred to public protector and all over the show by people. They were just vicious, spiteful little complaints. Because we forgot that snakes bite, you sometimes take a frozen puff adder, bring it out of wherever it is and put it in your jacket, and then it bites you and you wonder what happened. It's the same kind of thing. We found complaints, forum shopping, complain to everyone. Before you finished with one complaint, the same person on the same issue, which has no interest in, is complaining somewhere. So we're running, the portfolio committee chair asked, what are you up to, what are you doing? You must write something, then public protector, then it's public protector province, then it's public service commission, running all over instead of doing our work because of one or two vindictive people. That's the fact. So there are those issues also in that, but I think Mam Netsiandu will deal with some of those administrative issues.
Thank you, Iri. We're going to take a 10-minute break. 10-minute break? Well, that's the secretariat must provide, and then we'll be back. 10 minutes. Thank you.
So that they can see and hear what's going on there.
And inform him.
Yeah.
And the next thing, when he went in the meeting like this, in the staff meeting, he always talk about me, not them. He said, because you and DM are close, he always talk about you. I said, but I'm the only one who's giving him a report.
Yeah. Yeah.
So said, look, this is what is happening, this is what is happening. The constituencies.
Precisely,
this is where you are in the list. People, they don't like you. They talk shit, this, that. I mean, Prophet Varus J. People don't even remember your face.
Just like that,
yeah. And that's what they like about you.
Rente en het meer, ik krijg meer resultaten van mijn
inzetten. Verskoning vra voor die 18 Oktober.
Ja, en die nie.
Ja. Maar ek sê gaan nou uit.
Ja, ja, ek het daai eers.
Ja, ek het super goed. Ja.
Ja, sê ja, ek gaan nou
dan so skop. By baie aan dat kan ek dan kan stap in die sin ja, maar ek moet
stap daar. Ja. Ek gaan stap daar. Definitief. Definitief. Nou, kan je zien als politieke actieve dat opstaat. Dat je in je Facebook, in je WhatsApp, alles hard op daar op. Mensen, de besluiten zo bijvulliger.
Ja, dat is niet zo van een lang.
Nee, alles nog. Now that one, you see that one? Your deputy did. Who queried me about the parking? Do you see what they wrote to me?
Uh-huh.
She.
So someone says, why is she not here? Why is not here?
Let's see.
Quick to put out.
No,
the two of us.
Hey, man. The two of us. Hey.
Why is there for parking?
Eat us. That man, he told us in no uncertain terms, listen here, up to the air, no further, man. I'm not taking nonsense of you people.
How old does this thing is?
What? I'm going to give it to you now.
So
you,
you
can read now. You can read now yourself. I keep that one.
What's the time now?
Almost four.
Almost four.
Right. Thank you very much, honourable members. Thank you very much for coming back. I think let's continue with the responses by iPad. Edie, over to you. Thank you. Thank you, members.
Thanks.
Oh, yes.
Person, I hand over to Ma'am Nisianda now.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, members. With regards to the 27 additional posts, the minister has approved our structure. However, we are still waiting the concurrence from DPSA. We are keeping on following up on weekly basis with them. They are still considering the structure to approve the additional positions that are there. With regards to the vacancy rate,
Ms. Nitsianda, Honorable Market.
Just to find out the process, if the minister approves, can somebody else say no?
Honorable Market,
yes, in terms of public service regulations, the Minister of DPSA must concur with the approval by the Minister. That's the process that we follow. Okay. And there are instances where they did not concur with the approval, and we had to resubmit again. So that's the process that we follow. Our minister writes to the minister of DPSA requesting that they consider and concur.
Thank you very much. Honourable Mark, are you happy?
I'm not sure whether I'm happy or not. well, I don't know the processes, but I was thinking, if Treasury says there's money, then public service, how do they come around and say now? Maybe they don't even have an idea of what their posts are all about. Yeah, something of that. That's why I'm saying I'm not sure whether I'm happy or not.
Thanks a lot. Let's continue with the responses. Thank you.
Okay. In terms of the process, every newly created position must go through the job evaluation process, which must be approved by our minister, and then DPSA will take it back again on the system just to confirm that evaluation result. They say it's a control measure that they've put in place because departments were abusing the job evaluation process, like putting positions that are supposed to be lower into very senior positions. So it's a control measure that they put in, that they've put in place, and they are empowered by Public Service Act to do so, as well as public service regulation. All right, thank you. With regard to the SMS positions that were vacant at the end of the financial year, Honorable Member, on page 89, the total number of SMS posts that we had at the time at the end of the financial year were 36 positions from level 13 to level 15. 8 positions were vacant. Among the 8 positions, you will remember when we came back from Ezival, a number of SMS members, including provincial heads, directors, insert, and some positions also due to ceiling that was imposed by DPSA were frozen, but those positions were still on our structure, and we needed to report on those positions, even though they were frozen. That will include our director, legal services, and so on, as well as the CFO position. Those were the positions. So out of 36, 8 vacant positions, that will give us 22.2%. However, we have since filled most of these positions. That includes 3 provincial heads, the CFO, and we are busy filling the rest of the positions, as well as also the position of the director strategy was vacant, but we are busy filling that particular position as well as we speak. With regard to the issue of grievances, maybe if I can explain that one, page 99 of our annual report. The 70% that you see there, the number 70 there is the percent. We had 10 grievances. 7 grievances were resolved. 3 grievances are still pending. Those grievances, 2 of them are coming from senior managers who are aggrieved because they were given written warnings, the same ones that the ED was talking about. And so that gives us a 30% of pending grievances. The disputes that were sent, referred to the council, we had 14. Those disputes, one was upheld and the person was paid for unfair labor practice. But this person, case occurred during 2015-16 financial year, but it was only finalized last year. The person was paid in August 2017, so it was resolved. And then 3 disputes, they were dismissed because they were not substantiated. So that gives us 21% of the 14 disputes. 10 disputes, 2 of those, again, it's those senior managers, they put the grievance for written warnings, and then they lodge also the disputes with the council, challenging those written warnings and wanting to be paid because they were issued with written warning. They're not disputing the substance of the cases, but they are disputing the process technicalities because they know law and so on and so on. So they want to be compensated for them being given because they think they've suffered as a result of the process where when a person is given a written warning and the person say is refusing to take a written warning, and then a manager would say, let me get a witness so that the person signed to say you refuse, and then the person walk away. And then by the time the witness comes, the person has walked away or has walked away already. And then the witness would sign on that written warning that even though the person has left, but I'm told that the person was here. So that person is saying the process in terms of the disciplinary code and SMS handbook, there must be a witness in front of that person and so on. So this person wants to be compensated. In another instance, the person is saying she was not given, it's an SMS member again, she was not given an opportunity to make a representation why she should not be given the written warning. But they are not disputing the substance of those cases. And so on. But others that are not resolved are like unfair labor practice, where a person is saying they were not shortlisted for the position and so on. Those matters are still there. Others with regards to pay progression, where a person is saying, no, I deserve the pay progression for that financial year and so on. Others is leave without pay, where a person violated the leave policy and absented themselves, but the person is aggrieved that a leave without pay was implemented. Others, it's about a resettlement. The resettlement that happened during the period of the disruption at IP at that time. And so those are the type of disputes that we are talking about. But there are only 10, not that are still pending, which gives us a 71%. So 71 is not the number, it's the percent. Mm-hmm. With regard to, I said I don't want to touch the issue of City Forum building. It's already been dealt with. I was saying to the ED, I was handling that matter personally, where I would sit in those meetings. While I'm sitting in those meetings at DPW, somebody is phoning the Shabangu guy. By the time I get to the office, the Shabangu guy is waiting for me at the office. Come and approach me, and so on. I had to tell him to really not come to my office, and so on. And they would come and present things that we were discussing in that particular meeting. So I said to CFO, since they have promised him that within 3 months they're going to finalize, I sat in those panels where they advertised the the building for twice, wasting money and our time. And when we're supposed to award, and they would just, somebody will come up and say, hey, by the way, when we advertised, we didn't mention this, and this thing is supposed to be, we're supposed to do it again and restart the process, and it's going to take another 3 months and so on. And that was it. So to answer the question now, we've been there for 10 years in that building, and they are getting, the service provider, the Shabangu, is getting the full payment every month, even though the IP is not paying for that building. Where is DPW getting the money to pay them? We do not know. We're not paying DPW for that because the lease was declared null and void, and we do not want to incur irregular expenditure. And we have informed this particular committee, National Treasury, as well as DPW about the same issue. But they are continuing to pay the guy. What was the other thing? Okay, yeah, that's all from my side.
Thank you, Ms.
Nandi.
Other,
maybe it's going to address the issue on page, on the where honorable member said we need to put some numbers on the blank columns of the APP. I think it's page 102.
Okay, the tables that are on page 102. There was nothing to report under those tables. The only omission would be that because there was no information to report, we're supposed to put the zeros or the dashes. So that is the only omission. There was no information to report. Yes. So we missed that during the proofreading. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other responses?
Thank you, Chairperson. Just one more. I think there was a question from Honorable Muller with regards to the reinstatement of legal service as a budget program. That has been done in terms of the 1920, from 1920 financial year, legal services will be reinstated as a budget program.
Mr. Zamini.
Thank you, Chair. There was a question about collaboration with other agencies in regard to community outreach. It will continue. It is happening. Our biggest partner is the public protector, but we also work with other departments, such as Department of Justice, to do community outreach. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. That's our responses. In case we've left something out, we'll respond. We might have, yes.
Honourable members, I know Honourable Kalabana has got three more questions. She indicated during the tea break. Okay. Right, thank you, Honourable members. Thank you for your input and interaction. Thank you also to the ED and his team for the presentation. As I said at the start of the meeting, we commend the unqualified, and we believe you can obtain a clean audit much faster than the CFO is estimated. Again, the ED must, as we said, must crack the whip, ensure that there is compliance, consequent managed within the department, performance, and we'll monitor the things as they go forward. So, and again, that we also indicated with the Civilian Secretariat, IPIT is an important institution ensuring conduct by the police that is in line with the Constitution, so they must continue with that work without fear, without prejudice. And on that note, I'm going to close the meeting and invite everybody to tea. Thank you.
I see.